Face the hammer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Thor's Hammer Radio. As always, I'm your host, Alex Thorson. Catch me on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson, at Thor Hammer Radio. Find me on Facebook, Thor's Hammer Radio, and also Minds.com, at Thor's Hammer Radio. All right, so we got a lot to talk about. And the biggest thing, North Korea. As you all should well know, assuming you're not hiding under a rock or just blind, deaf, and dumb, North Korea has been at it again, threatening to wipe cities off the face of the map. In fact, the claim now is that they have about 60 of these miniaturized nuclear weapons that they can put on ICBMs, which stand for intercontinental ballistic missiles, meaning that they go across continents, in particular across the Pacific Ocean to hit the United States. Big problem. So I'm going to go through North Korea. Let's start with the history of North Korea, and I'm going to work my way up here because there's a lot to go in, and this does tie together. Okay, with North Korea, before all this came about, starting in 600 or so AD, and going forward to the early 1900s, North Korea was its own separate kingdom, culture, empire, whatever you want to call it, that was separate from China and Japan, their own unique identity. And then in 1910, through the end of the Second World War, Korea was under Japanese rule. The Japanese came in and colonized it. Most of the Koreans were peasants, and they were doing a bunch of farming. They were very agricultural. And Japan, who had been westernized following the end of the samurai period, they came in and they developed mines and mills and manufacturing plants. And they also went not just in Korea, but in Manchuria, which is northern China. And in fact, many Koreans went to work in Manchuria. And they're starting in there was this guerrilla movement, too, in the mountainous interior and in Manchuria that was attacking the Japanese Imperial Army. And the most prominent of these guerrilla leaders was this man named Kim Il-sung. And I'll get to him in a moment. So North Korea, very little exposure to the modern Western world. Now, the exception here was Christianity. This is mainly due to the Portuguese and the British, who were very big over in China and that area of the world. So you had a pretty strong Christian presence, but for the most part, they really didn't have a lot of exposure to the Western world, unlike the Japanese after following the end of the samurai period. Okay, so then what happened is that during World War II, now this started, for the Chinese, this started in like the 1930s. I think it was 33, may have been a little earlier. But the Japanese were at, you know, this long war with China, and they also did this to the Koreans too. What the Japanese did, and they were brutal. We're talking torture, rape, mutilation, experimentation, murder. This is the worst stuff. And they also did this to U.S. military personnel as well, which is why to this day, China hates Japan, like with a passion. And the Koreans, for the most part, they hate them too. And most military veterans, the World War II veterans that actually served in the Pacific Theater, and there's very few of them left alive today, but since they went through this, or they know friends of theirs that went through this, this is why they also hate the Japanese. And which is why there was this huge pushback for a long time against the Japanese having any kind of major munitions, and in particular nuclear weapons. And by the way, that's an understandable position. When you go through that stuff, take me for example, fighting in Afghanistan, I mean, I always judge people's individuals, but I'm not going to lie, I very much have an animosity towards Muslims in general. I do have an animosity towards them, well, in particular people from that part of the world, because I've actually been at war with them. It's just something you develop. Not saying I'm going to automatically see them as, you know, like terrorists or whatever right off the bat, but you just kind of develop that when you've been to war with them and you've had to deal firsthand with people you just can't trust at all. So going forward anyway with the World War II, so what happened is that obviously we came in and we, after two atomic bombs dropped on Japan, we ended up forcing them into unconditional surrender. Now right before we did this, there was this Yalta Conference in which the Soviets actually agreed, because we were allied with the Soviet Union with Joseph Stalin during the Second World War, they actually agreed to go to war with Japan. And they declared war on them in early August of 1945, but it didn't really mean much because we came in and nuked Japan, and then the war was over. And so you had these two Koreas, because you had in the north, the Soviets wanted to input one of their own. And they were thinking at first of this Christian nationalist, as he's referred to, Cho Man-sik. But the Soviets ended up going with Kim Il-sung, who I mentioned earlier, and because he's a hardcore Stalinist, or was. He passed away in 84. Now, Kim Il-sung, just for reference, he's the grandfather of the current Kim Jong-fat-ass, who's the little midget fat fuck who's running North Korea right now. So that's Kim Il-sung is Kim Jong-un's grandfather. So Kim Il-sung became the leader of North Korea, and he's a hardcore Stalinist. He was a huge praise of Joseph Stalin. He even had his people worship Joseph Stalin even after Stalin died in 53. Now, with South Korea, you had a completely different take, a completely different one. They didn't want to reach out to the Soviet Union. They instead wanted to reach out to the United States. They wanted to be democratic. And this was Syngman Rhee, who was the leader of the South. Now, when it came to the Koreas, they ended up, between us, the United States, and the Soviet Union, we ended up agreeing on this dividing line, which is the 38th parallel. And that's where the DMZ is located right now. And the DMZ is, today, is a 2.5 mile wide, basically just no man's land of just tank traps, barbed wire, mines, you name it. It'd be a killing field. And it's on the 38th parallel. Now, Kim Il-sung wanted to invade the South several times. In fact, Joseph Stalin rejected several requests. However, in the late 1940s, what happened in China is that you had Mao Zedong, who was another communist, who led a revolution in China. And we actually, under Harry Truman, who was the president, we actually basically withdrew support for the Chinese traditionalists, the nationalists who wanted to stop them, and that basically sealed their fate. So once in late 1949, when Mao Zedong officially achieved victory, then all of a sudden it became a lot more plausible, because you now had the Soviet Union and communist China and communist North Korea. And South Korea is all by itself. And, of course, us, the United States, we're on the other side of the Pacific Ocean. Though we still have a sizable military presence throughout the Pacific. Well, the point is that you had forces right there. And then China not only was communist, but they actually offered to send troops in support of North Korea. And the Soviets themselves, they sent troops, but more in the form of advisors in order to train North Korean military units. So now we get to the Korean War. So the Korean War occurred in 1950. And what the North Koreans did is they launched an all-out offensive across the parallel. And this was in June of 1950. And what happened with the Korean War is that the initial push by the North, and this is what scares a lot of people with a possible conflict today, what happened is that they pushed all the way through South. They captured Seoul, like, really quickly. And Syngman Rhee and his government had to get the hell out of there. And they pushed them all the way down to pretty much the tip of South Korea. And it's this area called the Pusan Perimeter. American units, which are there with some limited South Korean forces, they were holding off on the Pusan Perimeter, basically fighting for their lives because their backs are to the sea. So then what happened is that General Douglas MacArthur, and MacArthur is the famous general who said, "I shall return to the Philippines" during World War II. He was the main general in charge of the Pacific Theater during the Second World War. So what MacArthur did is he came through at Incheon Harbor, just the southwest of the Korean Peninsula. You've got the Yellow Sea there. And Incheon Harbor is right at kind of the tip end there of North Korea that touches the Yellow Sea. MacArthur landed troops at Incheon Harbor and then moved in and took out the North Koreans, like came in from behind them, outflanked them, and took them out. And then what they did is they drove them all the way north. They went beyond the 38th parallel. They actually took Pyongyang, which is the capital of North Korea. And they actually pushed the North Koreans all the way to the Chinese border. Now, MacArthur, because we knew that Communist China had volunteered to send troops, MacArthur said, okay, they're going to send troops, so we need to be prepared to fight them off. MacArthur actually wanted to bomb the Yalu River, and he was even considering deploying nuclear weapons in case it came to that. Now, President Truman was against this. So what happened is that we didn't use any of that, and we didn't actually do any of the heavy bombing against the Yalu River. And the Chinese poured over 1 million men across that river, and we ended up getting pushed back again. And we ended up having an armistice signed in 1953. And the borders, well, they're the 38th parallel again. Essentially, we went all the way down, then all the way back up, and then right back to where we started. So the armistice was signed in July 27, 1953. But there wasn't an actual peace treaty. So technically, since that time, all the way to now, which we're talking 67 years at this point, we're technically still at war with North Korea. There was no peace treaty, it's just a ceasefire. Now, going forward from there, so, and keep in mind, about 48,000 American soldiers lost their lives in the Korean War. It's often a forgotten war, that's sometimes what it's referred to, but almost 50,000 U.S. soldiers died in North Korea, or in the Korean War. So this wasn't a small war, this was a major war, absolutely. So then going forward from that, so Kim Il-sung, who is the Stalinist leader at the time, he completely isolates his country. He makes it so that you couldn't, North Koreans couldn't marry foreigners. He expelled all sorts of basically foreign ideas. He even got rid of some other certain communist works because he was just a hardcore Stalinist. And he combined that with North Korean specific nationalism and also a cult of personality, not just around him, but also Stalin as well. So North Korea became incredibly isolated, whereas South Korea went with democracy. And you look at the two Koreas today, South Korea has a GDP of a little over $2 trillion a year. North Korea's GDP is $40 billion. And North Korea spends 25% of that on the military. Now think about that. $40 billion. Our country in the United States wastes at least 3 to 4 times that much. Compared to what we have about a $17 trillion GDP. $40 billion is nothing. But that's North Korea's entire GDP. And these people, they live in a prison camp. If you ever look at North Korea at nighttime, you see bright lights in South Korea, especially around Seoul, which is very close to the DMZ. And you got some bright lights over in China, in Manchuria area. And then North Korea is completely blacked out. If you didn't know that was North Korea, you'd think you're looking at the ocean. But it's because North Korea's got no electricity. North Korea is just completely, not only isolated, but it's got no money. It got no resources. It's got no electricity. And so you even look at the comparison that people have done with people that live in South Korea and North Korea. South Koreans, on average, are taller than North Koreans. They live longer. They have a much lower child mortality rate. It's a huge contrast. And the only difference is that North Korea is Stalinist and South Korea is more in line with American values. That's it. That's literally the two differences. But look how much of a change it makes in real time in terms of real life effects it has on the population. And so going forward with that, North Korea they continued their Stalinist buildup. Now, one thing North Korea does have over South Korea is they have more troops. North Korea's standing forces, which includes active, reserve, and also paramilitary, is upwards of like 7.6 million soldiers. They have a huge military. Now, South Korea, by necessity, they have a big military too. Of their active and reserve, they have about 5 million. But South Korea spends a lot less as a percentage of their GDP on their military because they can afford to. So that's basically the quick history of North Korea as it was starting from way back in the past to coming up to today. So they've continued their Stalinist thing through Kim Il-sung and then to his son Kim Jong-il, and then all the way to Kim Jong-un, who's now the latest in the Kim dynasty, and now he's threatening to use nuclear weapons. So now going into the nuclear history of North Korea. So North Korea, in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, they were looking at getting, well, first nuclear reactors, and the Soviets helped them out. They helped them out big time with this. And we, the United States, we actually had nuclear weapons stationed in South Korea as a deterrent, not just against the North, but also against the Soviet Union, also Communist China. So beginning in the 1980s, so during the Reagan administration, North Korea built a factory at Yongbyon to refine yellowcake uranium. And what the North Koreans can do, and anyone can do this, is that if you have the engineering know-how and the resources, you can actually take spent fuel rods and use them towards nuclear weapons. And what happened is that there was this treaty, this nuclear non-proliferation treaty, signed in 1985. And the purpose of that treaty was to stop rogue states like North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. There wasn't anything we could do about the USSR. They have, and to this day, Russia still has like 7,000 nuclear weapons. And we, the United States, have about 6,800. So there's nothing we could do to stop that. But us and the Soviet Union actually worked out an agreement to stop the proliferation of nukes to these rogue smaller states. In fact, one little interesting tidbit of history, we actually gave the Soviets the technology for nuclear fail-safes. And the reason why we did that is because there was a huge scare about Soviet nuclear weapons going missing or being stolen, especially after the Soviet Union fell, which actually, it's actually a good thing we did this. So we gave the Soviets the technology for nuclear fail-safes. So that way, the way the nuclear fail-safes work is that every 24 hours or so, you got to reprogram or punch in the password to keep it armed. And if so that way you can't just like stuff a nuclear weapon in a vault for decades and then all of a sudden it gets forgotten about and then dug up again and hey, there you go, nuclear weapon able to use. No, it doesn't work that way. You have to be able to use a nuclear weapon by having these fail safes to make sure that in case they fall into the wrong hands, they're not going to be able to be used, especially allowing that you to be able to deactivate them remotely as well. So we gave the Soviets this technology because of our fear of Soviet nuclear weapons going rogue or going missing. Now, these smaller countries that are building these nukes, they don't have that. And that's a big problem. But going forward, so by 1989, the Soviet control of their communist states throughout Europe began to weaken quite a bit. Now, this is 4 years after the signing of this nuclear non-proliferation treaty. Satellite photos show that there was new construction of complexes in the North Korean town of Yongbyon, which is where this reactor was at. That was like their first big nuclear facility. So this is already 4 years after the treaty. And then by 1991, so this is during the George H.W. Bush administration, the Read My Lips, No New Taxes guy, yeah, that's him. The same guy who was Ronald Reagan's vice president. So in December of 91, We withdrew all nuclear weapons from South Korea. So our deterrent was gone. And then in 92, so not even a year later, we're talking like 6 months later, North Korea finally allowed a team from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. This would be the United Nations' little nuclear inspectors. And lo and behold, they found inconsistencies. Hans Brix from Team America, who's going to write an angry letter, telling you how angry they are. So he was suspecting that North Korea was secretly using their 5-megawatt reactor at Yongbyon to turn spent fuel into weapons-grade plutonium. What a surprise. Of course it went. That's what they were doing. So they're already cheating. And the North Koreans blocked inspectors from inspecting two of their suspected nuclear waste sites. And the IAEA found evidence the country's not revealing the full extent of their production. And then by 93, by March, they threatened to withdraw from the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And facing heavy domestic pressure from Republican Party, Bill Clinton, who's the president at this time, he appointed a man named Robert Gallucci to start a new round of negotiations. And after 3 months, North Korea announced it has suspended its withdrawal. Then in October of 94, the U.S. and North Korea signed an agreed framework where North Korea agreed to freeze its plutonium production program in exchange for fuel oil economic cooperation, construction of two modern light water nuclear power plants. And North Korea's existing nuclear facilities were to be dismantled. And then Hans Brinksch again, in later that same month, in October, he's not very happy with the agreed framework because it gives North Korea too much time to begin complying with the inspections regime. This sounds familiar. This is like the Iran deal with, oh, you got 28 days before we inspect, so go ahead and hide all your crap in that time. Yeah. Going forward on that, 1996, Hans Brinksch again, and he's told he's still not made an initial declaration on the amount of plutonium that North Korea possesses. So here they are. We've gone already from the 1980s, where they're not supposed to have nuclear weapons at all, to we need to put a freeze on them. Okay. So we're the ones retracting, as it were. Going up through 1998, they launched a PAK-2-SAN space launch vehicle. But we, in the military, we suspect that it's actually a ruse for the testing of an ICBM. Then going forward into 2002, so now George W. Bush is president, and he named North Korea as part of the Axis of Evil. And going forward through that, well, it appears that North Korea admitted to their talks in having a clandestine nuclear program. So they weren't supposed to have nukes. Now they do, and they have a clandestine program. And then in December of that year, North Korean-made Scud missiles are found aboard a ship bound for Yemen. North Korea continues building. They make repairs at Yongbyon. They're stalling the IAEA. They even expelled two IAEA inspectors in late December. Then South Korea in 2003 asked China to use its influence. Yeah, that worked out great. Then in January of that, later in January, North Korea announced they're going to withdraw again from the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And then they say Bush is being, he's guilty of aggression against the DPRK. And then the IAEA is continuing to negotiate. North Korea is continuing to renege. And then they say they're going to sign an agreement. It just keeps going through all throughout 2002, 2003. At the end of 2003, they offered to freeze its nuclear program and enlist for concessions from the United States. Right. U.S. rejected that. George Bush said that Pyongyang must have dismantled its program altogether. 2004, there's more talks, more negotiations. 2005, North Korea says it's willing to restart talks, blah, blah, blah. It's this long list of all this stuff going on. Fourth round of talks, fifth round. End of 2005, North Korea intends to resume nuclear reactor building. 2006, they test fire missiles. In October of that 2006, they announced plans to test a nuclear weapon in the future and blamed hostile U.S. policy. Give me a break. Going through 2006, even more talks. Oh, and more U.N. resolutions. Well, that's wonderful. 2007, more stupid talks, useless talks. North Korea blaming U.S. rhetoric. Then said it's shutting down the Yongbyon reactor after receiving fuel oil aid from South Korea. Of course, they started it back up again. 2008, now they're still building up and doing their talks. Oh, and then October 11th of 2008, the U.S. removed North Korea from its state sponsors of terrorism list. This is under Bush. And now 2009, under Obama, they keep doing their stuff. And North Korea says it's not going to take part in these talks again. And then in May, it tested as its second nuclear device. And then 2012, in April, they tested their third nuclear device. Or they're prepared to. They actually ended up testing their third nuclear device in 2013, and they're launching more satellites. And then in 2015, in May, North Korea claimed to have nuclear weapons capable of hitting the United States. And in December, Kim Jong Fatboy claimed, now he's in charge at this point, and he also killed his uncle with an anti-aircraft gun. And he claimed to have a hydrogen bomb. And then in 2016, they conducted their fourth nuclear test in January. And they also claimed to have their first hydrogen bomb. And North Korea, in September of that year, conducted its fifth underground test. And then in October of 2016, so this is a couple weeks before the election, DNI director James Clapper, that would be the same James Clapper who forgot we were doing that in regards to the NSA spying on Americans. But James Clapper said that North Korea abandoning its program, or us persuading them to abandon their program, probably a lost cause, end quote. Since to North Korea, it was their, quote, ticket to survival. And any discussions about ending their nuclear ambitions would be a non-starter. This is James Clapper saying this. And now here we are today. North Korea has 60 nuclear weapons. We were told they only had 10. But now apparently they have 60. Oh, and by the way, there was a report out that Obama and his ilk knew about this back in 2013. Apparently they published a memo about North Korea having these miniaturized nukes. But somebody slipped up and it was actually, this memo was published in 2013. So Barack Obama knew they had this and he covered it up. I gotta ask a question. At this point, is there anything that Obama knew about and didn't try and cover up? Because it seems like every week or every couple of weeks we hear about something else that Obama tried to cover up that he knew about during his administration. But so here we are. So here we are after we started with North Korea is not supposed to have nukes at all. Then we got to freeze their nuclear program. Then we went to, they have nukes. We got to negotiate, blah, 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 see if we can get them to chill out. And then at the end of 2016, the end of the Obama administration, you had that idiot James Clapper say, well, that's probably a lost cause, you know, persuade North Korea to abandon. That's a lost cause. Hey, it's their ticket to survival. And God, are you talking about this Trump guy? Okay, so that's where we're at. Now, 2017, they have as many as 60 miniaturized nuclear weapons that they can put on ICBMs that can cross the Pacific Ocean to the United States. This is where we're at today. And these idiots out there, they're blaming Donald Trump for rhetoric. Are you joking? Are these people fucking nuts? The North Koreans have been violating and cheating and just completely... None of these negotiations have worked. Ambassador John Bolton said it plainly that we've been trying the same tactic for 25 fucking years. Not quite in those terms, but 25 years, and it hasn't worked. Now, the definition of insanity, ladies and gentlemen, is trying the same damn thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So negotiations haven't worked because the North Koreans keep cheating. They say they'll sign. Oh, yeah, I'll sign this. No problem. Okay, hey, you over there. You'll keep building now. Yeah, that's what they're doing. Oh, yeah, I sign. No, don't look at our nuclear reactor. We keep building. That's what they're doing. And now this is where we're at. And so this is the kind of shit that just fell into Trump's lap. What happened is you had George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama. They all kicked the damn can down the road. And now this fell into Trump's lap. He didn't do any of this. In fact, there's actually a good video where Trump actually was talking about nuclear proliferation was being a big problem back in 1999. His words are almost prescient, aren't they? And now it's ironic he's got to deal with them. And the media, the idiots out there, are ripping Trump for his fire and fury comments that he recently stated. In fact, you know what? Go ahead and play those comments. Let's listen to them.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening. Beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Yeah, you're damn right. If North Korea tries anything, we should wipe them off the face of the map. And now North Korea is threatening Guam, which is a U.S. territory, and in fact there's a lot of U.S. soldiers stationed on Guam, not to mention a lot of U.S. citizens there too. So yes, we should be defending Guam, defending our allies, defending our homeland. That's what it's all about. Now don't get me wrong, there's a lot of measures we can take economically and politically to put the pressure on, especially China. Because China has been supporting them through black market. And Russia has in many ways too. But this is a good thing. This is what you're supposed to do when somebody's threatening you. If some nut says, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to kill your whole family. And then in response you say, hey listen asshole, you set 1 foot on my property and I'll put a bullet in you. Now, is the bad guy, the escalating rhetoric, is it you who said you're going to shoot him if he comes on your property? Or is it the nut job who said he's going to come kill your family? Well, obviously it's the nut job. That's the expected response to a nut job like that. And that's exactly what North Korea has been. Oh, but Donald Trump needs to sit down and negotiate with him. That's like asking the Batman to negotiate with the Joker. That's insane. And Trump doubled down on this comment too. And Secretary of Defense James Mattis also said a very similar thing. That if North Korea tries anything, we're going to destroy them. Completely obliterate them. Which is the expected response. And quite frankly, what he should be doing. Because guess what? Negotiating and trying to get North Korea to stall or dismantle is just not going to work. We've been trying it for 25 years. And it has not worked at all. And yet the idiots out there want to say Trump's at fault because of his rhetoric. Are you fucking joking? So Trump making the fire and fury comment, that's wrong. We have a problem with that. But you don't have a problem with some nut job over North Korea who's threatening to wipe whole cities off the map and kill the civilian population of our country. Have I got that right? This is insane. You can't rely on these people to fight a war, I can tell you that much. You really expect the idiots out there that are all butthurt over Trump's comments like that, you expect them to fight an actual war to defend this country? No way in hell. By the way, just for historical reference, the left went nuts too when Ronald Reagan joked about legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. The bombing begins in 5 minutes. The left went nuts over that. But you can't expect these people to fight a war for you. The same idiots that get all worked up and butthurt over comments, over jokes, or in Trump's case, a very valid response to North Korea acting the way it is. But thankfully, as Ronald Reagan put it in his famous National Defense Speech, these people do not speak for us. If it comes to it, we will put our ass in line, those of us who are true patriots, and fight to defend this country and defend our allies. I myself am one of them. I'm out of the service now, but hey, if it came to it, I'd go right back in. Because it's what you're supposed to do. It's what you need to do in order to do the right thing and defend this country. All right, well, I went on a pretty long segment, but North Korea is a big topic, so that's why. So I'm going to take a quick break here. When I come back here on Thor's Hammer Radio, I'm going to wrap up the program with a few final thoughts, in particular this recent thing that happened in Charlottesville. We'll be right back here on Thor's Hammer Radio.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. There's no place in America. What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives. No citizen should ever fear for their safety and security
in our society. And no child should ever be afraid to go outside and play or be with their parents.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. How is this a controversial statement at all? Oh, but you don't understand. It was all the white supremacists. No, it wasn't. You see, in Charlottesville, if you actually look at the camera footage from on the ground, you had Antifa, who are communists, and Black Lives Matter. And by the way, they primarily were the instigators of violence. Now, there was violence on all sides. And of course, you had that horrific vehicular crash that looks like it was intentional, and they caught the guy. And then there was also a state trooper helicopter that ended up crashing. Now, that looked like it was unrelated. Or, well, you know, it wasn't caused by anyone. It was an accident. But still, so basically the death toll is 3, and you had dozens injured. But Trump was good to condemn all sides. No, you don't get to say, oh, well, there were, the violence by these people is wrong, but when these people do it, it's okay. No, that's wrong. All political violence is wrong. Now, if you want to remain neutral, like you don't really care about it, okay, fine. And that's okay. Like, for example, my stance when this Montana body slammer guy, I was pretty neutral on it. I mean, obviously it's wrong, but I didn't really care about it. Because I don't live in Montana, I don't vote in Montana. And more to the point, this happened a couple days after the Manchester bombing in which 24 kids were killed. I care about that a hell of a lot more than the Montana thing. So the people that want to remain neutral on this, okay, fine, got it. We still recognize it's wrong, you don't really care about it. But the people out there that are saying that, okay, the white supremacists, they need to be condemned fully, and the violence that they do is all wrong, but when Antifa and Black Lives Matter, nah, that's fine. No, it doesn't work that way. And you got some idiots out there that are saying, well, maybe they should have been shut down from the start. Well, actually, these people, not only do they have a First Amendment right, it applies to them too, but they also actually had a permit. Which, by the way, it's kind of stupid. You need to get a permit to protest or to speak your mind, but whatever. That's how they work in Charlottesville there, and several cities are like this. But they had a permit, and they, more importantly, they have First Amendment protections. Okay, I understand something. It doesn't matter how reprehensible a group is. And by the way, these people, the Richard Spencer and his crowd, they're not conservatives. So stop trying to... The idiots out there that are trying to tie the conservatives and Republicans and all of them together with them, no, we're not with them. They're not our... If you want to use identity politics, they're not part of our camp, okay? But the Richard Spencer crowd and the like, they have a right to say their speech and do their little protest. They have a right to do that, as does anyone else in this country. You don't have a right to physically attack people. And the government does not have a right to just shut down their speech because they don't like it. It's amazing that this has to be explained to these morons on the left that want to shut them down. This is basic First Amendment shit right here. But this is how crazy the left has gotten. And by the way, something else. So one of the things that sparked their whole rally was that they were afraid about statues of Confederate. It was Robert E. Lee. At a statue in Charlottesville, and they were going to take it down. And the mayor's response to this is, "We're going to start taking down statues." Okay, idiot, you just kind of proved their point for them. In other words, when they're coming out, like the Richard Spencer in the crowd are coming out and saying, "Hey, you're taking down statues, you're destroying our history. Hey, you're trying to shut us down." And then the response by the left is, okay, let's tear down these Confederate statues. And hey, maybe we should think about expelling them and preventing them and shutting them down. They don't have to sit there and make an argument back and forth. The idiots on the left are making their arguments for them. When your response to them is, okay, all those things that you were afraid of us doing, we're going to go ahead and do those things anyway. You just validated their damn argument. It's just amazing that the left's response is censorship and trying to shut them down, which is stupid. That's not how you do this. No, you don't respond to a protest that you don't like with violence and censorship and destruction of stuff. That's not how you do it. The way you deal with them is that you let them have their stupid thing. You let them, and granted, the optics on this, as it were, are pretty shitty. I mean, you got a bunch of these morons marching around with tiki torches. It looks like a damn Klan rally in many ways. And it's good to condemn them and condemn what, as certainly the violence, okay, certainly the death toll that responded from them, absolutely. But you don't go around and say, okay, we got to shut them down. No, that's not what you do. Because now you're that, if you do that, you're compromising on the First Amendment. In fact, the people that are out there saying, hey, we need to shut them down and violence against them is okay, the people that are doing that are acting fascistic. Okay, it's a fascistic thing to shut down speech you don't like and use violence to intimidate someone to stop their speech. That is what fascists do. So BLM and Antifa and the way that the Terry McAuliffe, the governor, and the mayor, the way that they're acting fascistic. And Terry McAuliffe, that moron, had his speech about, oh, you're not patriotic, you're cowardly. Excuse me, Terry McAuliffe, but you're going around validating their point that the alt-right was making of you trying to silence them and shut them down. McAuliffe is validating their point and acting like a fascist. So you don't deal with these clowns like Richard Spencer and was it Jared Taylor and a couple of, you don't deal with them by saying, okay, hey, we're going to shut you down and we're going to bring in these outside groups to use violence against you. Well, granted, they didn't say that, but that's what happened. And then going through and destroying statues in history, that's not how you deal with them. The way you deal with them is you let them have their say, you give them their press if they want it, but you basically do like the MLK way. What they do is that pictures of this is what actually happened, and then the counter, the response to it. You put them side by side, and the people of the United States look at them side by side and say, hey, you know what? Those people right there that are being nonviolent, and they're not engaging in this violent crap, we side with them because they're the reasonable ones. These people over there, they're nuts. And when you bring in Antifa and Black Lives Matter who start doing this stupid stuff, like I saw one video where, and it wasn't even the alt-right or white supremacists, anything like that. It was a group of veterans, and they were just standing on a sidewalk. They weren't doing anything. They were on a sidewalk. And people on the other side of the sidewalk, the Black Lives Matter crowd, in particular these young black kids, were throwing rocks at them. Now, they were on the other side of the street. They weren't doing anything. But these clowns are throwing rocks at them, and people are getting injured. And then when it was the reporter, Faith Goldie, who's with the Rebel Media, she went up to talk to them and asked them if they were trying to leave. And they said, yes, they're just trying to get out of there. And as they were walking away, the crowd, the mob, is following them and hounding them out. That's not civil discourse, ladies and gentlemen. Look, if you're against what Spencer and that lot stand for, which many of you should, I am, I don't agree with just about anything. By the way, Spencer holds a lot of socialist positions, too. The guy's all in favor of universal health care, and the guy believes in a universal income as well. Okay, so this guy is no conservative by far. No, I don't personally think Spencer's a Nazi. I just think he's a dumb shit. But when you have the left doing what it's doing through violence and censorship, and going ahead and doing the things like destroying statues and destroying history and promoting this mass immigration, and you got morons on Twitter that are celebrating that, hey, by 2050, America is going to be a majority non-white country. Why is that celebrated? And the people in, like, the alt-right, all they got to do, they don't even have to make an argument on it. They just got to point to exactly what's happening. And by the way, think about this, too. So you've got, for years, this anti-white racism. And it is. When you have a coordinated effort through academia, media, Hollywood, political institutions, that it goes against white people. Say that, oh, if you're white, you have privilege. And we give all these different ethnic front groups and all these special things to anyone under the sun, except if you're white. And in particular, a white male. Because, you know, feminists have their own, like, feminist superiority. You know, women and feminism. And you have these, like, black supremacists and Latino supremacists. Like, you know, Latinos got La Raza. And blacks got Black Lives Matter and the Black Panthers and all that. So you've got this culmination of all this stuff that ultimately it discriminates against white people. Because why? Because they're white. Okay, so you're racist against somebody. You're discriminating against the color of their skin. So we have all this shit going on. And then all of a sudden, they're surprised. They're surprised that someone like a Richard Spencer, Jared Taylor, whatever, comes along and says, hey, look at all this stuff over here. All of you disaffected white men. Look at what's going on. And then there's a movement in response to it. A white identity movement. And people are surprised this is happening. No, this is the logical result of what happens when you constantly do this racism against white people shit over and over and over and over again. This is the logical result that you're going to have a counter movement that is like pro-white identity. In particular, pro-white men. It's a logical counter movement to all this social justice shit that's been going on. To further excoriate this point, if your tactic was all this identity politics and division, and this is what it led to, well, then obviously that was a really stupid fucking idea. So maybe you should instead focus on individuals and not the collective. And maybe that'll bring people together. But, you know, with these idiot leftists, it's never going to happen. They're just not. They're really not. They're so focused on group politics, identity politics, and they're so focused on race. Everything they talk about is race-based. And this is what you got. And these people, they're like mirror images. Like, they tried out this moron David Duke, right? David Duke is literally a mirror image of Al Sharpton. Okay, Al Sharpton's a race hustler for black people. David Duke is a race hustler for white people. That's it. They're literally mirror images of each other. But in the leftist mind, Al Sharpton's, he's okay, he's our man, but David Duke, he's horrible. Mm-hmm, yeah. Even though they do the same bullshit. But this is what it's come to. And we're never going to get away from this crap. It's only going to get worse unless the idiotic, stupid idea of identity politics and racial division and all that goes away and you focus on the individual. But the collectivists out there are never going to do that. It's going to be in one ear and out the other. We'll have to see where this goes. In the meantime, we can say our prayers for the people that are injured and certainly for the families of the victims, of the death victims. So, but there's not much more to say beyond this other than, like I said, Donald Trump's statement was a very good statement because he condemned violence on all sides, which is exactly what he should do. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap up this podcast for this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As I went into a long bit about North Korea, but it's important to understand the history and the nuclear history as well, the negotiations and the failures and all that, and then this bit about Charlotte as well. Well, as always, you can catch me on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson, at Thorhammer Radio. Find me on Facebook, at Thorshammer Radio, and Minds.com, at Thorshammer Radio. All right, I appreciate you joining me, and I'll see you next time here on Thor's Hammer Radio.